Okay, Jeff Matuszak, owner of Carolina Metal Fab, right?
There you go, yep.
So thanks for coming in today, Jeff. So tell me, what is Carolina Metal Fab?
So Carolina Metal Fabricator is an industrial fabricator out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Our motto is, we don't build the building, we build everything inside the building. So we do carbon, we do stainless, and we do aluminum. On the carbon side, we do handrails, platform, mezzanine decks. On the aluminum side, we kind of do the same thing. And then on stainless, we actually will do higher end stainless steel miscellaneous, but it's predominantly miscellaneous steel. And okay. We don't do installs. We're a fabricator only.
Okay, so you bring it there in a modular way.
Correct, yeah. We throw it on a truck and hope the GC or the rector can find it all.
Okay, so what projects are you guys currently involved in or recently been involved in?
Yeah, so we do a lot of generator platforms. We do a lot of mezzanine decks to hold equipment up. We've done furnaces. We've done a lot of hoppers. And that's kind of what we're doing right now. But every year, what we find is something different. So in 2022, we did a whole bunch of platforms for a major distributor that I can't name. 23, we worked a lot on the pharmaceuticals because a lot of pharmaceutical companies came back to North Carolina. So the larger pharmaceutical companies needed higher-end platforms. And then in 24 and 25, we found ourselves on this data center stream. Mm-hmm. And we're just doing kind of whatever the data center group wants us to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like a good thing considering all the AI and all the need for servers and so forth.
Yeah, it's always crazy how much data the data centers are doing. Like, it's not just one data center. It's always like, we're going to build one, and then they have plans for another six or seven. It's interesting. What I find funny is, like, how are they going to provide all the power for these data centers?
Tell me what you would do.
Well, I would figure out either fusion or nuclear. Just like, because somebody's got to come up with either a smaller nuclear reactor to power it, because you just can't keep pulling all the power off the grids.
Yeah, that seems to be a problem already.
Yeah, it is.
And so I saw that they're using the heat that's being thrown off all these servers, actually pushing that back into to create electricity itself.
That's crazy.
Have you seen that?
No,
so,
I haven't seen
it
yet.
If you think about these data centers, the amount of heat they have cooling systems in there to keep the whole thing from basically melting down,
sure.
Right? And so I guess somebody's like, you know what? That's probably enough heat to harness,
right,
and turn into electricity. So there is, and of course, there's going to be a loss.
Sure.
Just laws of thermodynamics are going to state that you're not going to get equal what you put into the system.
Right.
You're going to get a little bit less. But that's something. If it can, if you can recoup maybe 50% of the energy loss that goes in.
Yeah, it's. I mean, they are absolutely pouring off the heat. So are they doing it through like a turbine through the heat to create the electricity back in, or?
That's an assumption that I would make.
Right.
But yeah, I think they've got to turn it probably into mechanical rotation somewhere.
Sure.
To to create the electricity, but I don't know the details of how they're doing that.
Right.
But I don't know. They're going to figure it out.
Somebody smarter than us, or at least smarter than me.
It is us. Maybe we're the ones.
Right.
Like, there's no accident. We've been brought together.
That's right.
To solve this.
Well, I was laughing. I bought into one of these smaller companies that obviously are talking about, hey, we're going to build these nuclear reactors. They haven't even built a nuclear reactor yet, and they already have over $1 billion valuation. And they haven't even created the design yet. So it's insane just the amount of money people are pouring into these groups.
So had they built, who are these people?
It's a company called Oklo. And by no means should anyone buy their stock that's listening to this.
Okay,
I don't know enough of them.
This is not guidance.
Right. I am not a financial advisor.
Right.
Yeah, I bought them at 45. And just in the last 3 months, it went up to 180. And then it dropped back to 130. I mean, they haven't done anything yet, it's interesting. It's almost like we're on that bubble of like how everybody was in tech back in like the early 2000s, and people were putting money into like pets.com or those type of deals where they would just have value, perceived value, when there was really no value yet.
Yeah, well, I think you have like this alignment right now of that doesn't happen very often, which is the investors and what – society actually wants to have occur are sort of dovetailing, meaning that there is a need for society wants more data to occur. Whether they're explicitly thinking that way or not is a different story, but they want devices to be more powerful and faster.
Right.
I mean, every day that they wake up, there's almost an expectation of like, what's new today?
It's true.
you know, and oh, cool, update my app or all this stuff. So you really have that strong drive that way. And there's also, you know, I think you'd say geopolitical need to make sure all this stuff is advancing and invest your dollars. So them just having somebody stand up and say, I'll try and do this.
Right.
And we don't really know how to do it, but I'm willing to dedicate ourselves, you know, fund us, and we'll go really get the people involved.
That's right.
To know how to make this happen. And so I could see how, you know, something that relevant could garner or attract cash that quickly.
Sure. And then you just got to bet on the right horse, right? Yeah. There's six or 10 companies out there. You just got to bet on the right one.
Do you think that that there's really a genuine desire to solve for energy?
I think so.
You do?
I do. I think that because they have to, right? Somebody has to keep these data centers running. So they got to figure out what's the play. So I do believe there is a general concern about that.
Yeah. I think there's a genuine concern. Well, I feel like that we have a lot of opportunity with existing technology to put a lot of these discussions to bed. And I think there's a lot of like muscle memory about kind of, you take nuclear, for instance. I mean, people of our generation have, you know, Chernobyl on the brain and have things like Nagasaki, Hiroshima, like Hiroshima, like those sort of things. And there are others that just have labeled this technology as like not happening.
Right.
Meanwhile, there have been, you know, there's one in just down the road at 70 in Callaway County, there's a nuclear plant, you know, halfway to Columbia, Missouri.
Okay.
That's been cranking away since like 1975.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I think, you know, nuclear has gotten labeled in a way that is, I think, just a bit of a lightning rod.
Right.
And there's going to be opposition to it. Now, I think the technology is not what it was. And it's just punitively maybe being tagged.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Absolutely.
But not to be dismissive of its destructive capability.
Right.
You know, I mean, clearly that's a real thing. And it's a real shame that weapons of mass destruction are nukes.
Right.
And, you know, electrical grids are nukes. Like the fact that those two can be confused for one another isn't helping. But I think that you know, I don't know enough to know. I'm not a molecular scientist, so I can't say exactly. I mean, I get the concepts, but you know, but I think that there's an opportunity. Like geothermal, I think has not been tapped.
Right.
Think of it this way: we're like, the majority of the mass of the planet is fire.
Yeah, down in
right. Mm-hmm. And how far down is that? You've got the crust, the mantle. Like you get down through that, and you have it basically an inexhaustible source of heat. Right.
How far do you think someone's ever actually drilled down?
I really don't know the answer to that, because I'm sure it's further. There's got to be some sort of top secret, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I know that governments do things. They're testing limits.
Right.
And so how far can you drill? You know, someone said that. They're like, I don't know. Let's go do it.
Sure.
So to answer your question, I don't know. Is the Mariana Trench the deepest point on the planet, you know, under the ocean? I don't know.
I don't know. But I just know I read this article, fake news or whatever, and it was like they were talking about like the Russians actually were trying to drill. And you can only go so far. It was literally like they had to stop because of just the amount of cave-ins that were happening on it. So it's just interesting to see like – and it wasn't even that far. It was not even close to getting through the core.
Well, I guess you could take – let's say we don't have to dig.
Right.
Or drill. We have volcanoes on the surface. You drop conducting rods right down those things.
Good.
Right. And, you know, and there's a lake right by it. and it's just constantly creating a closed loop steam system.
Sure.
I mean, that would last forever.
Yeah.
And so I just think there are a lot of ways to do this, maybe a lot, meaning like three or four ways. But I think it's very complicated because it's clearly very complicated. But in a vacuum, you could say, let's just go do that.
Right.
But I think when I say, is there a genuine desire to solve this, I think there's the humanity side of it, which is there's so many jobs involved
in
the energy creation. And if you just presto say, look, we're just going to use this volcano and we're good forever, that has problems associated with it,
which
is all those jobs.
Right.
And my idea may be a shitty one. So who knows? I not me. I mean, but anyway, I just wonder, is there really, has this been solved? I don't know.
People smarter than us are out there.
Back to your original point. Yeah. So we got a little off target there, but okay. So we got Carolina Metal. In talking before this, you own a few businesses.
I do. Mm-hmm.
And you were passionate about the idea of entrepreneurism. And both as a topic, but also as a way to reach out into your community and help people kind of, find their way as an entrepreneur or peer-to-peer group. So maybe talk me through how you got to the point of being an entrepreneur.
Okay.
Was it on purpose?
No. No, I am not your typical entrepreneur. I'm not like how you guys are doing it here, startup. I'm nothing like that. I actually work for a private equity firm. Started with them in 2005. Prior to that, I worked for a company called International Paper. And through the years, from 2005 to 2019, I got to run companies. I got to run plywood mills in the South. I ran a company called Merchants Metals. It was a large large galvanizer of chain link fence, 37 distribution yards, 5 manufacturing locations. I was down in Mississippi running a plywood mill. In 2019, my dog, unfortunately, was dying. My son was going to college, shout out to University of South Carolina, and my wife said, you got to get off the road. I flew 168 times in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, what am I going to do? And she's like, I don't know, just figure it out. And I said, well, I don't think I'm smart enough.
She wasn't worried about the details.
No, she's like, I don't think I can work for somebody because I've always run it. I love manufacturing, love industries. And she's like, I don't know, just do something. Get off the road. And so I went, I called my finance guy and I said, hey, JD, what do I do? I got to find a company. And JD was like, a good friend of mine is a broker and he's selling a metal fabrication company. Would you be interested? And literally within 3 months, I'm sitting behind a desk at Carolina Metal Fabricators in July of 2019. I bought it. I did the SBA route, put the house up, as collateral, put my net worth up as collateral. And I said, man, 2019, 2020, it's going to be great. So in 2019, every entrepreneur does, they're not happy with just owning the business. I go to the FabTech show. And I'm like, you know what I'm going to buy? I'm going to buy a Vortman 807.
Got
to
do it.
Because why not? Yeah. I'm already in debt.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
So when I bought the Vortman 807, they had just come out. It was a smaller version of the 808, very similar to a Python or beam cut. And went in. I saw the Dragon, Bentec Dragon, so pipe. I was like, this fits our shop perfectly. We're only 16,000 square feet. This is going to be the best thing because 2020 is going to be our year. 2020 is going to be the best year.
God, dude. How you knew that?
And so we all know what happened in 2020. We don't need to digress on that. But what I found is I'm sitting there wondering, how am I going to pay the Vortman? I'm sitting there and going, what is this virus? And I'm sitting in my car going, I don't have anyone to talk to.
Had you ever felt that level of stress before?
Yes.
You have?
Yes. Yeah,
Would you get mugged or robbed or something?
No, that stress comes working with private equity and running some of those companies and sitting on board meetings. Yes, you feel the stress. But no, I won't. I'll say this. It was my own personal money, right? And I knew I had 20 people that counted on me at Carolina Metals. And it was – I just sat. I was telling Rachel and your group, I was like, I just sat in my car. I just didn't know what to do. And I was like, who do I talk to? And I can't call the guys that I used to talk to because they wouldn't understand. It's not their money.
You didn't feel like it was your wife at that moment? No.
She's going to listen to this. So I just really appreciate her support and her backing.
That's the truth. But her original comment was like, do something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but she also was smart enough when I came back from FabTech, because she went to Chicago with me, and I was like, oh, I'm going to buy this and this. She goes, are you sure? You just bought the company. Why don't you not buy anything? Give it like a year or 2 years until you start buying equipment. And I was like, no, 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 just listen. Like, we got this idea.
One of us is the entrepreneur here, okay?
I know what I'm doing.
I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for 6 months. Back off. It's like,
we've married over 20 years, so yes, I love her. and she hears you.
Yes.
Far smarter than me.
Understood.
And I just sat in my truck, and I was like, I don't even know how to go inside. Like, it was that, like, just demoralizing. And like, we were making like these transmission poles and transformer boxes. They were going to California. California shuts down. You know, we were going to Texas. Luckily, Texas was still open for certain things, but it was just like things were just shutting down. And the Vortman hadn't even shown up yet. Vortman shows up in April.
How much had you already given them? Had you already paid for it?
Oh, no. So the greatest thing about manufacturing finance is I put $100,000 down bank.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they only charge you another 70%. I think it was 70% the rest of the way. And then you're in for like 90%. And then after 90%, once the machine runs, then you pay the other 10%.
Okay, it's like the install, basically.
Yeah, it's the install. So it's like, so I'm all in, right? So the bank's literally like, hey, this is your monthly payment.
Wonderful. You know?
And the bank, obviously, for SBA is like, this is your monthly payments. And it was rough. Like I tell everybody, it's not easy being a small business owner.
No, that's like the Star Wars trash compactor scene. We're like, it's all coming together. Like,
it is. It was one of those deals. And I was watching just cash flow out. You know, I wanted to keep my crew. We did keep our crew. We didn't lay off. But I had it, like, I just kept pivoting. Like, what can I do? What can I do? And it was obviously the roughest time. We got through it successfully. It made us a better shop. They finally were able to install the Vortman in July. We had it obviously up and running. Luckily for that, the Bentec Dragon was obviously running. And it put us in really good marketing. So then I got onto LinkedIn. I started doing this like cool pick Friday. Every Friday I'd take pictures. I started building this network, right, of other people. I was like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing here. If you went back to my old LinkedIn post, one of them was like, I don't even know why I bought this business. Like, it was, I didn't care. Like, I was like, hey, I'm real. Like, here's what I'm facing. Like, and we got July of 2020. I had like this whole like, kind of like, what am I doing kind of post. And everything
is existential.
And
like,
it was like,
what am I doing with my life?
It was one of those things. But you know what? What was great about it is my son and I, we got the summer together, right? Because like, so he came to work for me. He was painting, he was sandblasting. And because I'd always been on the road, I never had that, right? Like every day we'd drive into work. Every afternoon we'd leave work. So it was such a, like we
oh,
really
that's
created
huge.
A huge, and if I had worked for my current company, I would never have had that time. So I, even though like sitting in my truck, possibly crying,
maybe.
You know, maybe.
Might have something in my eye.
You know, like, at the end of the day, those were the cool things, right? Like, so I got to spend more time with my parents. I got to see my nephews play ball. It was just so there were some really added benefits that I kept telling myself, obviously while the house is burning. But at the end of the day, it was the right thing. But I digressed. So I started looking out for small business owners. And I'd have people call me or text me and be like, man, can we talk? And all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah. Like, here's what I would do. And I never really gave advice. It'd be like, here's my experience. Here's what I'm facing. And we started this small business brewery group. It was like four of us. It's up to like 25 people now. And we all get together once a month at a brewery. And we all talk about kind of like, what are things going on? And that thing's now lasted. I think we're on our fifth year. And I said, well, you know what? I want more. And so I joined a group called EO.
There you went again.
Yeah. So I joined this group called Entrepreneurial Organizations. And I sat in a group of seven other entrepreneurs that are all facing the same thing, but they're not manufacturers. One's like a marketing guy, one's a GC, one owns commercial development, one puts in surgical centers. And you know what? At the end of the day, they all have the same problems.
Like, yeah.
And then I looked around the room, I go, okay, I'm not alone. Because that's the worst thing. As a small business owner or as an entrepreneur, you just feel you're alone. You feel nobody gets it. And then when you start meeting these people, you're like, oh, you guys all have these same issues. And it, I still remember this day. I was like, I was really feeling bad. And I was in this group and I was talking about like, man, I had to use the PPP money. You know, I had to pay my employees. I'm like, I thought I could turn this around. And one of the guys looks at me and goes, hey, we're in a fucking pandemic. Just give yourself some grace. After that, I was like,
did you kick his ass?
No. I was like, I looked at him and this weight lifted off my shoulders. And
yeah.
I
said, you heard him.
Yeah. I was like, wow, you're right. And we are in a pandemic. You know, we are facing these issues. And it was after that, it was like, all right, what can I do to keep giving back? Mm-hmm. So I have a couple guys I mentor. One of the guys I mentor, we actually bought into a floor coating company. And he's running a very successful floor coating company called United Floor Coatings of Raleigh. Two of the guys there run a company called MSSW. And now they're my partners at Miscellaneous Stainless and Steelworks out of Durham. So we partnered up together. And Cape Point Bait, another company of mine on the coast, we're the largest frozen bait distributor on the East Coast from Savannah, Georgia, up to Delaware, came from one of my partners that we used to do a lot of business with down in Mississippi. So I started creating more and more of these families of entrepreneurs, and it's just helped me grow. And I love that. I love when you asked me what was my passion, I obviously jumped into fishing because I love to fish. But at the end of the day, it's just watching these people grow, watching young people do what they want to do and not just get stuck into some corporate job.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like total bullshit, but there is nothing better. It really
– yeah.
It's really gratifying. And to circle back, you talked about frozen bait. How do we get to a frozen bait? Okay, so you've got stuff that – the bait, I'm assuming, was originally sourced from – the ocean, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right? Where all frozen baits source from.
Well, it depends.
Some of it's farms. Farm-raised shrimp.
So does this company harvest the bait and freezes it?
So what we do is Cape Point Bait is out of Beaufort, North Carolina. And what we do is we bring in truckloads of frozen baits, shrimp, mullets, clams, ballyhoo, just a number of different things. And so what we'll do is we take the shrimp and we cup it ourselves. We put a little bit more water and we blast freeze it. Mm-hmm. And we go through a ton of shrimp. We go through a ton of mullet. We actually, my first year when we bought it, I would fillet 100 to 300 pounds of mullet, just me and a fillet knife and four other guys. One person's cutting off the head and I'm out there filleting
through it.
Yeah. It was a cool experience. We still have the company. It's doing great.
What's the freezing process? Is it as simple as it might sound, or you guys have like some wizardry that would
We have a minus 14 degree freezer. So we call it our blast freezer. And literally we put everything in there. 12 hours later, it's solid as a rock. And then we move it to another freezer that's just 0 degrees.
For the uninitiated, why have frozen bait?
What? Oh, so if you go out to a pier, you go to an outfitter store, you decide, like, for example, my son, we would go to this pier every year and we would buy a frozen cup of shrimp and we'd go out on the pier and we'd spend the day fishing together. And that's literally what thousands of families do up and down the coast of the, up and down the East Coast.
So it's literally frozen.
Yep, it's literally frozen. Then it thaws while you're sitting on the pier and you just pull a shrimp, put it on the hook.
But why is it frozen?
Oh, so it stays fresh.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You can't have smelly shrimp fishing.
Got it.
Yeah, it's got to be fresh or the fish won't.
They'll know.
They'll know. The fish will know.
So you've got
a lot of squid too.
So you've got an entrepreneur group mm-hmm. that's been going on for a bit and you're seeing that it is creating business opportunity for you and for them.
It is.
Along the way. So what do you view as kind of the future of that group and where would you like to see that go?
So I actually turned the group back over. So the small business group is actually from a good friend of mine. His name's Steve Rock. He owns a rock grading company in Raleigh. So he's now in charge of that group.
Last name's Rock.
Yep. And owns a rock grading company.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool. Like he's got it's pretty badass.
Is that why he does what he does?
No. He also came from a PE firm and said, I want to do something different and bought rock grading. So he's a great guy. They actually just had a meeting yesterday that I attended. So no, he's now in charge of it. So he's taking it the way he wants to take it, probably very similar. Now I just spend more time We actually just are in the process of purchasing a building for Carolina Metals, a much larger building. So I'm in the process of trying to get that up and going. So I'm spending more of my time there, and I don't have enough time to dedicate to the group.
Stupid question, though, but why are you buying the building? What's going on there?
So Carolina Metals is we have our properties leased. And so what we want to do is we want to have our own property. And so Carolina Metals, where we're at now, we actually share the acreage with one of our customers. And, you know, obviously we can't just lay steel out. We can't tell a customer, hey, we can hold this handrail, or we can hold this steel, or we can hold this platform for 2 months, because we don't have the room.
Yeah.
So now the new building, knock on wood, the PSA signed. We're just waiting for – we're actually – what's crazy, we're waiting for the septic system to make sure the septic system can hold our people, the number. And so we're going to have 5 acres, 18,000. It's a single bay. It's 60 feet wide, 300 feet long. We're going to put a couple of cranes in there, drop the Vortman in there,
wow,
and just have like a whole – so now like we can actually open ourselves up to additional volume. We're kind of just constrained at a certain revenue number.
Right.
That we just can't get past. We open up into this, we can have another shop. We can have maybe a machine shop or another miscellaneous shop. So that's kind of our thought process.
Okay. So you're putting the pieces in place for,
yeah,
for a bigger operation as
correct,
well as just overall upgrading.
Yep.
Okay. So, and you, this is currently just a piece of land.
It's got a building on it.
It's got a building on it.
I call it a building. So the building is missing some walls.
Okay.
So it's unique. I took my wife out there and I was
And what did she think?
I said, she was like,
I was like, just
visualize what I'm thinking.
No,
I was laughing
with
your
imagining.
I was laughing with your team out there. I kept saying, well, just kind of like think outside the box, you know, like. And she's great. She's like, I get it. Like, I understand what you're trying to do. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done, a lot of grading. It's currently owned by what they do is they make fabricated concrete walls. So there's a lot of concrete runoff that needs to be graded out. There's a lot of aggregate everywhere.
Well, you could view that as the ground's been sort of stabilized.
Right. That ground is no give into it whatsoever.
So do you have to stabilize that ground? Given the weight of the things that you guys are using?
No, so because they're very similar, because they run tractor trailers across there all the time,
mm-hmm,
I feel pretty confident it's going to hold up.
Yeah.
Just because, and again, the concrete runoff. But we're going to make it really nice. But if you looked at it today, you'd be like, Jeff, what are you thinking? In fact, I've had a friend, Chef, I brought out a couple of my buddies who I trust implicitly.
And Jeff.
I was like, look, and one of them is Steve Rock.
Yeah.
One of them is Jeremy Taylor. He runs a concrete company in Raleigh. And I was like, guys, seriously, is this a mistake? And they're like, no, this is great. I'm like, no, like, don't just put smoke up my ass. Like, is this good? And they're like, no, this is perfect for you. I'm like, are you sure? Because like, hey, we're putting a lot of money back
perfect
into
for
it.
Perfect for me or perfect? Like, no qualifiers.
And so they're like, no, Jeff, this is going to be perfect for Carolina Metals. And I know it will. I brought my VP out there. His name is JT Thomas. He's great. He was like, Jeff, we can do so much with this. I brought my former VP of ops out there as well. I'm like, give me your opinion. So, and I'm like, but you know how it is. Like, you're the boss, right? If you're like, you go to your team, you're like, hey, I got this great idea. They're going to be like, Chef, that's a great idea. And it may not be. And so you have to have people that you trust. And so I had to bring all these guys out there and be like, all right, does this make sense? And everybody's like, no, this is perfect. And I want to be the industrial fabricator of choice on the East Coast.
Okay.
Like, I want people, because I am an industrial guy. I've run mills. I've run plywood mills. I've run, obviously, telephone poles down in Joplin, Missouri. I've run lumber. I've run merchants metals. Like, I know fabrication. I know industry. Like, I can talk to general manager. I can talk to plant managers. Like, I want to continue to grow the industrial side. I don't want to build banks. I don't want to do stuff like that. I want to be that guy that goes into a factor and says, I can do that for you.
There's a lot I'm thinking about right now.
Yeah.
And so part of it is we can talk about future state of fab shops, which is, we're always positioning for future state, right? And what is AI, which perhaps people are tired of hearing about, but they need to be paying very close attention to, because it's moving Sure. At such an extreme rate that, I mean, I just can't overstate how much people need to be paying attention to that. But the other thing I'm thinking about is more from just an entrepreneur perspective, which is, what do you think is hard about running a business?
I think.
Do you think it's hard?
Yes.
It's, I just want to back up. Maybe you're like, no, it's easy.
Oh man, everybody should do it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It's hard. I think people are hard, right? Like making sure you get the right people in the right seats. And if the person's not in the right seat, how do you get rid of that person or move them to the right seat? That's hard. It's hard going out and selling every day. You're constantly selling. You're constantly either selling yourself or selling for the business. And all the fabricator guys know, you could have a great project and not make any money on it because an estimator screwed up on the plate thickness. Or we had a job, we screwed up. We thought it was quarter inch. It was half inch. It was during 2021. And we lost money. And it's everything's hard. But when it's good and you bait that job, you make money on that job, your crews are happy, you know, you're doing some really cool stuff inside the community, it's fun. And then you wait a couple weeks and it's hard again. You know, it's my wife will sit there and say it's a roller coaster because some days I'll come home, I'll be like, this is great. We're crushing it. And other days I'm like, why are we doing this again?
The moment I feel like something's going well, I mean, you got to duck.
Oh, yeah.
Something is about to hit you in the head.
Yeah.
It's like the moment you feel like, okay, smooth sailing. No. It's like you're about to get blindsided so fucking hard that you've got no idea. Like,
that's right.
It's so alarming to feel complacency.
That's right.
And if you don't feel that way, you just maybe you're not in the right seat because anytime you're like, oh, coast is clear. It's about to all go dark.
Oh, absolutely. it's crazy. It's like, or you get that check right in the mail. You're like, man, this is really nice money. And it just buys a steal for the next job.
Yeah.
You're like, where did it go? Like,
yeah, it's kind of like, oh, great. We got a new furnace downstairs that I never see. You know, it's like,
right.
So you think, you talked about kind of the people part is really difficult. And it seems unreal to me that all the work that goes into fabrication, creating projects and so forth, that barring major oversights and incompetency, that it's a horrible truth that people can come out losing money from that.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens all the time and it's just the way that it goes. And you have to know that that's part of the deal, is that you could absolutely have 6 months of, you know, sleepless stress, right, hell, only just like you would have made more money simply just going to the casino that night.
Oh, absolutely.
And losing money.
And having probably more fun.
Yeah, the only possible thing that really comes out of that is like maybe team cohesion, you know, leadership, and also now the buyer of whatever was sold knows that when you mess up, you fix it.
That's right.
And so you've built a further trust inroad. So you're like, well, I can hang my hat on that, and hopefully they value that the way I hope I, you know, right. I do. But it's always a hard reality when you're like, we lost money and I just would have been better off sleeping that whole time.
Oh, yeah.
That's a dark moment.
Yeah, it is. And then, as the owner, you can't get pissed. You know, you can, but what's that going to even solve, right? Like, it doesn't. You just got to grab the team, be like, all right, look, here's what we're failing at. We got to turn this around. And then it's like, we had a job that we lost money at. And you know what? When we were throwing, the customer's like, hey, we need this by July 2nd. I'm like, we'll do it. They're like, there's no way you're going to do it. I'm like, we're going to do it. And I looked at my VP. I'm like, we got to do it. He's like, I don't think it's possible. I'm like, we got to do it. We put every resource into it. And you know what? We're literally throwing stuff in the back of pickup trucks to get it to that shop, to get it to that plant site. But we did it. We lost more money on that job than any other job. You know what we did? We celebrated. We celebrated. I took all my employees to the brewery right down the street. We had pizza. Nobody drank. Everybody drank soda. Like, I brought everybody to the brewery and everybody's drinking soda. And we celebrated because it was over, right? It's like, all right, everybody breathe. Now let's go on to the next one. Like, that's over. Like, we can't talk about it. We can deep dive this. We know what happened. But at the end of the day, what does it matter? Mm-hmm. We got to move to the next job. And that's just always constantly reinforcing our guys. We're moving to the next job. We didn't make money. Okay, that's fine. Let's move to the next job. Let's learn from it. but let's move to the next job. Because if you dwell on it, because I do, right? Like I'm a dweller, I'll dwell on it. But if my team just sees me dwelling on it, they'll dwell on it. And that'll impact them on their next estimate. That may impact them on their next project.
So what would you advise an entrepreneur who tends to dwell on those things? What do you say to them? Because that shit happens. And, you know, and it has different manifestations. It's not just something that's as concrete as what you're describing, which is like, oh, this is exactly what occurred. But what do you say to people who dwell on things?
I throw my own experience. I say, look, if I'm going to dwell, I'm not going to dwell on it in the office. I'll go home, right? I may take a bike ride. I may take a run. I may sit at a bar. That's how I'm going to get through it. I'm not going to do it in the office. Because if you do it in the office, it's going to impact everybody. Your attitude as a leader, like if you go into the office pissed, everyone's pissed. You go in the office and you're like, all right, look, we failed. Let's move on to the next one. They get it, right? Everybody fails. You know, you get into the Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame, and all you got to do is hit 3 out of 10 balls. So right. It's like, you know, like, guys, we can get through this. Now, you can't run a business and only hit 3 out of 10 balls. But,
no. But the it's base like, is reloaded.
It's one of those deals where it's just, you just got to get through it sometimes. So, yeah. And it's interesting. I have a good friend of mine, I mentor, and he's always up and down, right? And he'll call me when he's down. And I always laugh. I'm like, why don't you call me when you're up? He's like, yeah, but I'm doing well. I don't need to talk to you. I'm like, but I want to hear it. Like, I want to get some energy out when you're crushing it, you know? Like,
yes.
I want to get some energy from you when you have positive energy. And a lot of people get in to these small businesses too, and they think, you know, I ran X. I know I can run a blue collar fabrication shop, or I know I can run a blue collar concrete company, or I know I can run this. And they can't. They don't understand either mindsets or they don't just understand that you may go a month and barely squeak by just doing small piddly jobs just until the next big job. And you have to keep your crew there. You got to pay your guys 40 hours, because if you don't pay them 40 hours, they may not come back to work in 2 weeks.
That's a major rub, isn't it?
Right.
Which is during leaner times.
Right.
You finally got your team pulled together and you got your guys, and if the hours aren't coming, you're like, oh.
That's right. I was laughing. So this was latter part of 2019, early 2020. I was not taking a salary at Carolina Metals. I was like, you read all these books and they're like, you shouldn't take a salary, like sacrifice. And I met a good friend of mine. And
you're
said,
more?
I was laughing. And he was pouring the concrete for the Vortman. And he goes, hey, man, like, how's the business going? I'm like, yeah, it's going okay. Like, I haven't taken a salary yet. He goes, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And here's I don't know this guy. Right? He's a friend now. I don't know him from Adam. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, if you don't take a salary, it's a hobby. Take a salary. Take just $500 a week. Take something. And I recommend that to all small business owners. I recommend that to entrepreneurs. You have to take something. And so I read a book called Profit First. And Profit First literally talks about you have to take something as an owner. And you got to pay your employee first.
Why do owners tend to put themselves last?
Because they think that's what it has to happen. Owners think, I shouldn't pay myself. Now, obviously pay your employees, right? Every employee will get paid before I get paid. But you have to take some money. You got to pull some chips to yourself, because if you don't, it's a hobby.
It's a hobby, but I also think that when times are tough, it's like you have a team standing around you that's like, this guy's not helping himself.
Right.
Right, which is like they can see you just like dying. Right. They're like, pay yourself, dude, and yeah. Like we need you well.
Yeah. And you have to have a paycheck, right? Like, I can't call the bank and say, hey, guys, I'm not paying myself out of my business because I'm sacrificing myself for the company. So can I not pay this monthly mortgage on my house? I mean, that's just not how it works. So
they're typically not sensitive to that.
They're not. But it's interesting. But you meet so many people that are like, why haven't I paid myself in 2 years? And now I go through that whole process. When like, I haven't paid myself in 2 years. Like, well, then you're just running a hobby. Go find a W-2 job. Like, you have to pay yourself. If you're not making money at that company, why are you running a company? Profit's not a bad word.
It's not a bad word. And it's a great question. Why are you running the company otherwise?
Right.
I mean, I mean, you do it for a handful of reasons, but in the context of this isn't a hobby,
right.
I think that it's a fair question. So moving on, which is, let's talk about AI for as long as we can handle it. The there's a lot going on, and I would say within the last 3 months, it's leaps and bounds. And tell me what you see. We'll kind of keep it from going global here. So tell me within the context of what you do, fabrication, what do you see as sort of the threats to be? What do you see as the opportunities to be?
So we have, we use obviously ChatGPT like everybody else, but now we throw all of our contracts into ChatGPT.
Okay.
Because we want, and then we create a separate folder that says our non-negotiables. And we throw our non-negotiables in there, such as payment terms or retainage, a couple other non-negotiables. And literally ChatGPT takes that contract, takes our non-negotiables, crosses out whatever doesn't impact it or whatever obviously coincides with our non-negotiables, puts it in a document and sends it back. I never read a contract anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, I never read contracts prior to ChatGPT. My VP of Ops is Thomas. He loved to read contracts. He loved to read contracts so much, he would send me the contracts and think I would read them.
And what then, an idiot.
And he just retired in July. He was awesome. But he would send them to me, and then I would look. He had those read receipts, you know, on his emails, and he would notice I never read a contract. Because I just don't have the aptitude to sit and just read a contract. They're just so boring. So now everything gets thrown in ChatGPT. That makes it so much easier. That's where ChatGPT has made our life easier. I think ChatGPT can make our life easier on estimating, in the fact that give me the drawings, and either there's a lot of groups out there. I know SketchDeck, and there's a couple other AI groups out there that are coming up where my estimator no longer has to take Bluebeam, go through it, put it into Tekla. All that stuff is done. And why couldn't it be? Why can't my estimator spend more time reviewing what ChatGPT or whatever this AI program does, rather than having to do all that entire process? We could literally take drawings.
Why are you so accepting of this?
I think it's the right thing to do because it takes the onus off of him possibly missing. We'll go back to that quarter-inch plate to half-inch plate. If ChatGPT saw that, it would have caught it. My guy didn't catch it, right? And that obviously cost me quite a bit. If now my estimator's not going through and looking, okay, this is 3/8, this is a half, he's got it right there, right? He can kind of go through it. And then all of a sudden we can do more estimates. All of a sudden more estimates come available for us where we're not tied into X amount of estimates a week that all we can do. I believe it. You just showed me your product as well. Now we can take that, upload that into Brazos, and all of a sudden now we have almost our complete estimate. So you take AI, you take what you guys are doing. We could cut our estimates down considerably. So now when a customer, which typically happens on the industrial side, they don't give us 6 months. Our lead times are like 6 to 8 weeks. So now we can do more of those industrial jobs and get them in before major shutdowns happen or our holidays happen, and just make everything easier.
I think what it's going to do, I think what you're describing is the idea that taking all of the kind of friction out of putting a deal together is all going to be commoditized to in a certain way. And it's going to come down to how well do companies perform,
right?
Because all of this deal making, drawings, all of this stuff is being hammered out right now.
Right.
And everyone's going to have a level playing field there. And so it's going to come down to is what can this company as its core competency actually do?
Correct.
Right? Because now we've removed like all of the friction beneath that. And now you've got this equal opportunity to contracts. And who's just set up the best to perform? And it's going to make a lot of these businesses really just operating businesses. Like you're going to have like the PO just print out. Right? Great. We got to make this. And we go make it. And who can do it?
Right.
Right. It's going to commoditize a lot of those specialties and ways that people were getting deals and stuff like that. So the reason I asked why you're so accepting is because I think they're kind of, it's the normal curve of adoption, but there are a lot of, there was one just in here the other day that was really had his head in the sand about it.
Okay.
And was like, no, I'm not going that route. And I think the genie's out of the bottle. I don't think you can say I'm not going that route anymore. I think that that's really at your own peril.
Sure.
Is to say we're not going that route anymore. And they could say, well, we're creating so much dependency upon this tool, and if that falls apart and da 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 da, you know, it's like, well, fair enough, I guess. But 10 more are going to crop up in its place.
I always look at buying a lot of companies. And I buy a lot of companies, or look at buying a lot of companies that are, you know, guys about to retire. And they're still doing stuff. Like they're doing their financial statements, not even in QuickBooks. You know, they're just at the end of the year, they give everything to their accountant and say, did we make money? You know, so you look at a lot of these guys that you meet, there are a lot of people out there, they're not even adopting just regular Sage, QuickBooks, whatever else is out there. They don't even want to adopt that because they're afraid of knowing what their true numbers are month to month. So it's one of those deals where if they're not willing to do that, surely they're not willing to do AI. That's just not how it works.
Yeah, I think that it's scary to have that put in your face like that and be like, oh God,
right?
I don't get my sort of, you know, I like to coast 1 week out of four.
Or, right, like, or I have cash in the bank.
Or yeah, oh right. Shit, I don't. So whatever that is, and then what are the threats? So those are your opportunities. What are the threats?
I think the threats for AI, I don't really know of a lot of threats. I can't really think of one in particular. Maybe loss of jobs. Do we need this many estimators? Do we need this many project managers? The threats of AI. For example, I was at a deal exchange, and they talked about AI working with as a debt collector. So the debt collector would call, let's say you owed $1,000. The debt collector would send you a text and say, hey, Shep, you owe $1,000. And you would say, well, I can't pay $1,000. And say, well, can you pay? And you say, I can pay $250. And then it would say, can you pay $500? You'd say, yep, I can pay $500. And all of a sudden, you've just knocked off half your debt. Not a single person was done in that transaction except for the person that was holding the debt. Now the model goes, you have AI, and that they're AI. So now the AIs are talking to each other.
They're proxies.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it just turns into like, where's the personal touch? I think AI too. I was actually talking to the negative about AI is every email reads the same now. Have you noticed that? It's all like, have you noticed in your LinkedIn profile, everything says, hey Jeff Matuszak, I just saw on your, because I own a holding company called Directus, where all these companies fall under. I just was on your website and here's what I read. And it literally verbatim. And then all of a sudden the next day I get the same email, different company. And it's the same typical ChatGPT. It's like they just spam it out and there's no more personal touch.
Okay. So that's an interesting thing you're talking about, which is what does this do culturally, right? Which is, I think that they're humans are strange and highly variable, but the human touch part, I think one of the good things that comes out of this, I think there's going to be a lot of medical discovery. I think there's going to be a lot of great stuff. I think there's going to be just a tragic amount of job loss. Right. I think that there's going to be equal good and bad. Hopefully, best case scenario is equal good and bad.
Sure.
bell's rung, but hopefully it's the result is something we can live with. But the idea being where I'm going is the personal touch, which is all of content and emails all have just sort of this really monochromatic. And as humans, our senses, we just sense like that's not human.
Right. Something
not human about that.
Right.
And so I think one of the good things is that I think there's going to be outside of the business world, people are going to be turning towards human touch, meaning like, I want to go see a live band.
Right.
I want to know that that's not AI,
right.
You know, or I want to go do things that enrich my life. And I think ultimately, as much as people like the independence and the speed of all this technology, I think ultimately there's a desire to kind of be together. So I think that people are going to get burned out on how stale it is and find themselves together more. Now, I don't think that's a tomorrow thing, but
no, I think it'll take the time. Soon. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that's a great point. And you mentioned medical. Perfect example of medical. I had a buddy who's got some health issues, got a scan, and you know the scan came back and with some verbiage. None of us understood the verbiage.
Yeah, what's this mean?
Right. Took a picture of it. Said to ChatGPT, "What does this mean?" Told me exactly what it meant. The nurse came in and said, "Well, you got to wait on the radiologist." And I said, "But just out of curiosity, like we did this in ChatGPT, just you know, can you look at this?"
Pretty accurate.
And she looks at it. She goes, "Yep, this is it." Like, and she and then
she's
she
like, "That's the same answer he got."
And it was incredible because I was like, I didn't know like different things, and I'm not going to get too far into it, but it was amazing that I could take that picture and get that same result. Right. And it's like, that's where I think there, you mentioned the medical, I think that's where medical advance is going to be huge.
Yeah. I think it's boundless is what it is. Cause the IQ is going to be able to conceive of, and it's knowledge set. It's going to be able to conceive of theories that we can't even begin to conceive of. Like this, it's going to connect dots that,
oh yeah.
That no one human, even with the aid of the internet, will be able to even pull together.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, I think that, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens on the legal front.
Right.
You know, as you said, you're using it to summarize or read through legal contracts, but also think about legislation at a high level with these turbo attorneys and lawyers that are writing briefs and cases on both sides, right?
Sure.
So legislations may come to a grinding halt because both cases are so well written.
Right, that's true.
And then the judge takes the briefs and puts that in the chat GPT.
Should I do?
If you're like, what's the answer?
Right.
Like, you know, so it's becomes like this singularity that is going to be very strange.
Yeah.
And I'm just really interested to see what falls out of all of that.
Right,
It's a little bit... it's hard to think about after, like, when you try and trace a thought into the future, what AI can do, it becomes a little bit like thinking about nothingness. You're like, I really don't know what I'm thinking about anymore. Your thought just sort of breaks into pieces after a while. And you can't trace it down as far as you'd like.
Sure.
So anyway, so you've got the companies, you've got the entrepreneur groups.
Yep.
And we were talking earlier, to the extent you were talking about your wife and what her interests are. And I thought that was unexpected.
Yeah. She's awesome. So after her son went to college, she was kind of looking around on what else she could do. And one of her best friends owns Amy Ames Photography. And Amy Ames is a natural wildlife photographer. And so Susan started going to Yellowstone with her in the winter. So she saw her first pack of wolves chase a bison down and fell in love with it. So she's now gone to Antarctica to see penguins. She's gone to South America. She's gone to the Arctic. So she got pictures of polar bears and walruses. And
is that walrye? Walrus?
I don't know. What is that? Walru?
Yeah, like walrus? Walruses?
She's an amazing photographer, and so she retired. She's like, look, I want to retire. She got burned out. She was a nurse. She got burned out from COVID, and she's taken up. She's incredible, and she does her own calendars, and she's passionate about it. It's not her profession. It's not her job. She's just so passionate about it. And it's really cool. We have this device, and it literally, wherever she goes, if she gets Wi-Fi, she throws the pictures. So at home, I'll be watching TV, and all of a sudden, I'll see a picture of a polar bear pop up. Or I'll see pictures of penguins. I'm like, oh, that's where she is. She's on the ice today. Or she watched the whales. And it's amazing to see what she does. We went to Costa Rica, and she took beautiful pictures of, like, toucans and just different snakes and lizards. And it was just – it's crazy, her eye for photography.
Some people are just really good.
Yeah, it's like – and I have no patience. I went on a Yellowstone trip with her in the summer. And they sit there for hours, and they just wait for, like, the baby bison and the mom bison to stare at them so they can get that picture.
You're like,
and I'm already done.
Like, all I know is I'm sitting on a rock in the woods.
I'm literally like, why is there no Wi-Fi in Yellowstone?
So what did she think about Antarctica? I mean,
oh, she loved it. I mean, it was an amazing trip.
I mean, that's
for her.
Like, that's pretty far from here.
Yeah, yeah. So Antarctica was great for her because she got to see the penguins, but I think she was more impressed with the North Pole, where she got to see the polar bears.
I thought you were going to say Santa Claus.
No. She was 400 miles from the actual
top
of the Earth, or 600 miles, but just to see polar bears. She was on an icebreaker. There were only like, I think there were 14, 18 photographers on this boat. That's it.
So if you're standing on the top of the Earth, right at the top of the axis.
I'm a flat earther.
Okay, perfect. That's even better. That makes sense. Good luck with that business. So if you're standing on the axis, are you just up there spinning?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, she saw it was all day. You know, like we fish in Alaska, so I got to experience that one time where it's just literally like you have dusk and then it's bright again.
That's bizarre.
But it was really cool. She also did the polar plunge. So she got to jump in the water in Antarctica. She got to jump in the water in the Arctic.
Is that your deal?
No, I hate the cold.
Yeah. I'll be in the running car.
There's absolutely that. I mean, now we went to Costa Rica together. She got great pictures. We went to Azores together. She got great pictures. But no, if it's cold, I don't want the cold.
You're down in Costa Rica watching Judge Judy and Matlock.
I would be like, I'm all about the warmth. But it's really cool to see how far she's taken it. And just, she does a great job.
That's cool. So let me bring us kind of in wrapping this up. You've got these various things going on. What's the website for Carolina Metal?
Sure.
And what's the other, like if you want people looking at the flooring company or whatever, we can put it in when we release this episode, but okay. Where can they find
Carolina Metal? We're just CarolinaMetalFabricators.com. That's the easiest way to find us. That's where our contact information is. And you'll see a picture of me and my dog in the background of Contact Us. And then the holding company that kind of contains all these companies, that's called Directus Holdings, LLC.com. And that kind of tells you a little bit more about myself. The other managing partner, his name is Vipulit Latka, and a couple of our operating partners. And our operating partners are people that work inside the business and help run the business day to day. It's the best way to reach it. Or LinkedIn. We have a really cool LinkedIn. I have a cool LinkedIn following. We used to do what we call Cool Pick Friday.
Yeah.
And every Friday would show pictures. And right now we're under so many different NDAs, I can't show a single. I haven't shown a single picture in like 6 months.
Would you say the Cool Pick Friday is taking a hit?
It has. But on our other company called MSSW or Miscellaneous Stainless and Steel Works, we call it, I know, Miscellaneous Mondays.
And listen to this guy.
It's like, get a finance degree out of South Carolina.
Like a
you know,
poet.
Who is he?
Yeah, this guy's a menace.
And so every Monday we show that. And then if you go on the United Floor Coatings LinkedIn, you'll see pictures of, and again, we're not creative. We didn't come up with anything like that for United Floor Coatings.
Yeah.
But you'll see pictures of stuff we do. And we do both commercial, residential, and industrial floors, polish, stain, epoxy. So we do it all.
Well, great. Well, I want to say thank you for coming today. It's been really fun talking
absolutely.
To you about the various topics.
Yeah, and absolutely enjoyed it. Look forward to the next time.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.